Welcome to the third installment of the 2013 Ashton Awards podcast. The Ashton Awards showcase practical, local energy solutions that cut carbon, protect the environment, reduce poverty, and improve people's lives. In this podcast, you'll hear from some of the finalists for this year's International Ashton Awards, WWF DRC, Micro Energy Credits, and Atzuri Technologies.
WWF DRC. Rapid deforestation in the Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo is threatening its fragile ecosystem and over half the world's population of highly endangered mountain gorillas. Meanwhile, Virunga's burgeoning population, spending a high proportion of their income on illegally plundered charcoal, makes climbing out of poverty an impossible dream. WWF is training local businesses to build and sell stoves that halve the amount of charcoal needed, so helping protect the sensitive forest environment. It's also helping landowners start sustainable tree plantations for charcoal.
For everybody's information, my name is Juan Sev, and I'm very glad to be on this interview with Ashton. First, general background, I've been trained as a forest engineer and as an economist. I am the manager of the programs for WWF-DRC in the eastern parts of the country, and I am based in Goma, which is a city that is right on the border with Rwanda. First, I would say there's very high pressure on the Virunga National Park, which is a set of extremely privileged ecosystems, and that pressure results from wood fuel needs, from a large and rapidly expanding population in the city of Goma, and the rest of North Kivu province. We are trying to apply two parallel approaches, both through the development of small businesses. The first one is fuel-efficient cook stoves. They're promoting a very popular model that gives a 50% reduction in charcoal consumption. And the second approach is the development of forest plantations with fast-growing species to produce charcoal from planted raw material. We run around town looking for different types of stove models, tested them out, and we converged in about three models, which are being manufactured by the association, and one of them became by far the most popular, both as a result of the laboratory tests and as a result of kitchen tests. 10 to 20% of the family income, and in some cases a little bit more, would be dedicated to the purchase of charcoal for cooking meals. So a reduction of that by 50% has a very measurable impact on family budgets. Okay, there's roughly 18 associations as far as I can remember, and over 600 people involved, close to 500 women, and the rest would be men. So we have associations of gentlemen who hammer out literally the metal sleeves of the stove filter purchased by the ladies, and then the ladies, they prepare the clay, they put together, manufacture the clay body, assemble the clay body with the a cement mix into the sleeve, have them dry, store them, and either bring them to an outlet that specializes in selling, which is connected with the association, or sell them directly themselves. Okay, it started around the same time as the stoves program, talking about the tree planting program here. They had been conducted pretty much in parallel, so we're just beginning the harvesting and the charcoal businesses. The idea was to find people who would be interested in planting and focus on smallholders for the very simple reason that they pay more attention to what they have done. We've supported the plantation of about 4,000 hectares. There has been some uptake, fairly spontaneous, on the part of people around town who are seeking our advice in order to set up their own stove business. I see a business approach as essential. People must be able to earn additional income And for that, they must develop and learn a business. What does that mean? It means identify an attractive product, learn how to produce it, respect quality standards, learn how to market it and sell it, learn how to procure raw materials efficiently, set up, again, efficient production and distribution systems, and keep good accounts. Just a very tight summary of a business syllabus, if you will. I personally insist that when you're creating business, you're trying to develop independent economic operators. So to sum it up, we did not come to stay, we came to leave. To leave, of course, at the right time.
Microenergy credits. Lack of finance can be a major stumbling block for people in developing countries who want to buy renewable energy products, with even the cheapest solar lanterns out of reach for many. The US business, Microenergy Credits, helps microfinance institutions access carbon finance and provide loans for these products. MEC's largest program is with Hasbank in Mongolia.
My name is April Alderdice, and I am the CEO of Microenergy Credits. And Microenergy Credits is a social enterprise that works with microfinance institutions to set up sustainable clean energy lending programs. And when they do so, MEC tracks the carbon credits that result from households purchasing solar lighting systems, efficient cook stoves, and water purifiers. And then we sell those carbon credits on the carbon markets. We take a margin on the sale, which is what makes us sustainable financially. And then we pass the balance of the funding back to the microfinance institution so that they can scale up their energy lending program and reach more people. This I think, is one of the things that is unique about MEC. So we ensure that each financial institution has a financially sustainable business plan around their energy program. To do that, we place a staff person at the financial institution for 2 years to work closely and create a clean energy product unit. So we're really creating a business within the microfinance institution. And MEC is now partnered with financial institutions representing over 20 million low-income households in Asia and Africa. In late 2008, a staff person at Hasbank in Mongolia was investigating this very issue. How could Hasbank start a clean energy program? And that staff person, Sam Grant, actually heard a podcast in which I was interviewed and reached out to us and said, "Hey, can you help us?" It was a program that really took off. And so I would say it was the opposite of a strategic decision. It was a purely opportunistic decision, but sometimes those can be the best ones. One thing is very important, which is monitoring. And so for the carbon markets, it's necessary to have extremely robust data about who has bought the energy product and have they continued to use it over time. We developed Credit Tracker, which is our technology. It's an online platform that's used to monitor and track distribution real time. And we've used it to conduct monitoring of the energy products 4 times per year at our partners. So each of our partners is monitoring their energy products. That we're fostering a can-do mindset and then watching our partners generate this fountain of creativity and problem solving. So for example, when we started working with Hasbank in Mongolia, we had several options for marketing that had been successful at other partners around the world in Uganda and India and Bangladesh. Tried things like energy fairs, which had been incredibly successful in other countries, but we got very few sales. So our colleague, Matt Cusio, who was the program manager at the time at Hasbank, came up with this idea for product centers where it was actually a GAIR, which is also known as a yurt, was set up right near a busy bus stop or a marketplace, and it would have the products in it. So people could come inside, warm up, see the stoves, look at the home insulation in action. So this was the idea, and very much came from the local context. And we set one up outside of the office. We were holding a press event around signing our carbon agreement. And within 10 minutes, this little grandmother had popped in off the street and was asking questions about the stove. She was poking around with the fire, lifting the lid. It was just an instant success. And we ended up doing over 40 of these product centers. Microfinance institutions are perfect for clean energy. And the reason is that clean energy saves money, and therefore it is a financial choice. And so if we have the right partners in our mix, I can easily see this becoming mainstream within 5 years. I think it will be the norm for financial institutions to have a clean energy lending program as one of their standard offerings. Households that are served by microfinance or live within the footprint of a financial institution will have bought affordable clean energy products that include their quality of life as a matter of course. And MEC will be providing a return to our investors. And within 5 years, we're hoping to reach 20 million people with clean energy.
Azuri Technologies. Small solar home systems bring good quality light and phone charging to off-grid households and save them money, yet their upfront costs render them out of reach for the people who would benefit most. UK-based startup Azuri Technologies has developed a pay-as-you-go interface which allows households in rural Kenya to pay for solar as they use it with scratch cards, avoiding the need for microfinance.
I'm Simon Bransfield-Garth. I'm the CEO at Azuri. Azuri is a company based in Cambridge, and we've developed a pay-as-you-go solar product for sub-Saharan Africa, which means that instead of individuals having to purchase their solar power products up front, they can pay for them as they use them. It enables people, instead of spending money on kerosene and mobile phone charging costs, to pay that instead on providing their own solar powered systems. So Azuri is providing pay-as-you-go solar. So in effect, it's a bit like Sky TV. A piece of equipment is put into the user's house, and then the user pays for it over a period of time. We work very closely with a series of partners across Africa. And we've combined that with a piece of technology that we've developed, which is basically a cloud-based distribution management tool, which enables our distributors to have access to real-time information about their customers, about the equipment that they're using, and also access to training videos and customer documents and so on. So we've tried to make a process to assist our distribution partners and help them grow, because many of them start off relatively small, but they need to grow very rapidly. And so it makes sense for us to provide those processes so that each distributor doesn't have to go through the same learning curve. There are a number of different challenges that you have to go and solve all in one go. The team has been working very hard on making that happen. So I think it's really a combination of everything from financing through to product, through to distribution and so on. But one of the key things that we're very keen on is the way that we work with our partners and actually regard our partners as being an extended part of the business rather than just, say, distributors. And so that helps us get to market more rapidly. So I think the surprise to us has been just how broad the impact of providing really quite a small amount of energy can be. So the initial starting point was to replace lighting, or to seek to replace lighting. But what we found is that the requirements of our customers go way beyond lighting. So people are desperately keen to have access to mobile phone technology, to radios, to TVs, all sorts of devices that provide not just basic lighting, but also entertainment, information, knowledge, and so on. What we found is the importance of enabling people to progressively improve their own standard of living. And what we find is that there's a kind of an escalator effect. So people start off by getting a relatively small system, and that system enables them to improve their standard of living to the point at which they can afford a bigger system, which enables them to improve their standard of living, and so on. And so people are able to earn their way into a better life. Our experience has been that there is a tremendous entrepreneurial spirit in the markets that we're working in. And so we don't regard our end users as being victims or even as recipients. We regard them as being customers with aspirations, and it's our job to do what we can to help them develop their aspirations and build the livelihood they want to have.
You have been listening to the 2013 Ashton Awards podcast. To find out more about this year's finalists and this year's Ashton Awards, and to access more podcasts in this series, visit www.ashton.org. The 2013 Ashton Awards ceremony will take place on the 20th June and will be broadcast live on Green Dot TV from 7 p.m. UK time. For the latest news on the Ashton Awards, follow us on Twitter @AshtonAwards or search for the Ashton13 hashtag.